Welcome to another jam-packed episode of My Favorite Conservative. I am Edward.
And I am Andrea, but I am not conservative.
Whoa, seriously?
Nope, I'm not, but he is my favorite conservative.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So all right, so there are only 43 days until the election.
Wow.
I know, right? It's kind of freaky. Yeah. So let's get to the polls.
All right. Polls are us.
All right, here we go. So in the RCP, the Real Clear Politics poll, the national average, Trump versus Harris, last week she was up 1.7. This week she has gained a little bit. She is up 1.9.
All right. And we look back in history. On this day in history, we look back at the 2020 race and the 2016 race. And in the 2020 race, Joe Biden had a 6.6 lead on Donald Trump. And in 2016, Hillary Clinton had a 2.6 lead on Donald Trump. So Harris is up 1.9, probably a little closer than she would like.
Yes, absolutely. All right, ready to go to the battleground states?
Let's do it, dear.
Okay, I'll take the East Coast.
All right.
Sound good? All right. So Pennsylvania, last week, Harris was up 0.1. She is now up 0.7. And you and I believe that could be a result of the event she did. Oh, no, sorry. That was not in Pennsylvania.
That was not.
So I don't know what happened there. All right. Moving on. North Carolina. Last week, Trump was up 0.1. He is still up 0.1. Even though that margin of error is like it's well within the margin of error, I still think he's going to take North Carolina. And moving down south again on the East Coast, though, Georgia. Last week, Trump was up 0.3. And now he's up 1.7. So I think that's actually pretty significant. And I'm going to go ahead and call Georgia for him, not because of these polls, but because I think he'll get Georgia.
All right. Let's go to the upper Midwest, shall we?
Let's do it.
Let's go to Michigan, where Kamala met with Oprah.
That's
Oprah
right.
Winfrey.
Oh, and, be nice.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oprah Winfrey.
Yes.
Last week in Michigan, Harris was up 0.7. This week, she's up 1.7. So she got the Oprah bump.
That's the Oprah bump, for sure. Yes.
And right next door in Wisconsin, last time Harris was up 1.2 last week, and now she is up 1.0. So a little bit of fall off there.
Yeah. And again, I'm calling Wisconsin for the Democrats anyway. But
you want to take us out west.
Here. Oh, okay. All right. So last week, Harris was up 0.9. She has dropped. Now she's only up 0.2. So she's losing some ground there in Nevada. And then in Arizona, Trump last week was up 1.3. He's now up 1.6. And I'm going to go ahead and call Arizona for Trump. Ooh, again, not based on the polls, but I just feel like it's leaning that way. And on predictit.org, where people actually bet on the races, last week, and again, this is a little bit different, but if you've heard us, you know what I mean. So this is people betting. So these are not poll numbers or points, but last week, it was Harris 56, Trump 46. This week, it's Harris 58 and Trump 46. So now there's a 12-cent difference. These are actual cents. I think the gamblers are purposely shorting Trump.
They could be.
I think they could be. But it's always interesting, right? So that's a predictit.org. Fascinating. So,
I tell you what. It was kind of a slow week last week because we only had, since our last show, only one presidential assassination attempt.
That's right. It happened after we went live.
Yeah, a week
ago today. And funny thing is, nobody's talking about
it. No, this is down the memory hole very, very quickly. Yeah.
So since we're not going to talk about that, what are we going to talk about today?
Well, we want to stick with topics that are meaningful to the voters, our viewers.
Yes.
So today we're going to look at illegal immigration.
But we already did a show earlier this season on immigration.
Oh, we did?
Yes.
Well, I guess forget it then. Okay. Well, actually, today we are going to break down the actual cost to the taxpayers of illegal immigration. Yes.
Okay.
And right up front, I'm going to get my little rant out because I've been, as I research all of this stuff.
You did.
You know, this is a man-made crisis.
I totally agree.
Or woman-made, if you want to be real specific on this. Thank you, Kamala.
Well, Joe had a lot to do with
it,
too. But
from the moment the Biden administration took office, it tore down all the programs and the policies that were designed to stop illegal immigration.
Now, how much is this costing us? Because I think you forgot to tell us.
Well, it is costing, actually, right now, a minimum of $150 billion a year.
B as in boy. Yes. Billion.
Yes. How much was it for that wall, by the way? That was, what, $25 billion?
Something like that.
And kind of a permanent solution. Yeah.
But so tell us about some of the programs that Joe Biden immediately dismantled.
Yeah, well, he immediately rescinded day one the Remain in Mexico policy and safe third country agreements. Remember, when people file for asylum, they have to do it in the next safe country. Right. That went out the window. He almost completely abandoned the expedited removal, which means if you're here, you got to get your butt out quickly.
Yep.
And he began releasing illegal aliens en masse by the gazillions instead of detaining and deporting them as required by law.
Okay, I don't think it was in the gazillions.
Well,
that's
one thing. You never want to tell a Democrat what comes after a trillion because they'll spend it, right?
Okay, all right.
So, anyway,
all right, stay on point here. On point. That's my job. To keep
not only did the Biden administration release the aliens, it also restricted enforcement policies. So these illegals could not be apprehended, and it dramatically curtailed ICE enforcement. And they actually renamed ICE. I forget what the new acronym is now, but we're sticking with ICE.
And I want to just emphasize before I ask you the next question that we are talking about illegal immigration. We do not have a problem with legal immigration. And in fact, if you came to this country legally, we understand all the hurdles you had to jump through. And if you ever want to be a guest on the show, please reach out to us at myfavoriteconservative.show because we want to share your story. Because every legal immigrant I have ever spoken to over the last year or so has said, this is wrong. This is not okay. So where are you getting this information, Edward?
Yeah, well, this is from the House Budget Committee. And the document is actually titled The Cost of the Border Crisis. And this was testimony before the House Budget Committee in May of this year. So it's a 94-page document with about 20 pages of footnotes. But we're going to break it down here into the salient points. We're not going to go through 94 pages.
I'm really glad you're not reading 94 pages. Okay, good.
But testifying in front of Congress was actually a woman named Julie Kirshner. And she's the executive director of FAIR, which is the Federation for American Immigration Reformed. And she has 45 years of experience in the field of immigration and immigration
law. That's impressive.
So, yeah. This
impressive.
Is somebody who's been through many, many, many iterations of our immigration policy.
Okay, that's awesome. All right, why don't you give us the first one, and then I'm going to give some of the bullets.
Yeah, we'll look at some of the headlines of the report. And it's the fiscal burden of illegal immigration is due to several factors.
So I'm going to talk about some of these factors. Illegal aliens usually have low incomes, and those who do pay taxes pay little, if anything. And again, we're talking about illegal. Illegal aliens incur significant costs to the taxpayer on a daily basis. I saw this when I lived in California, because public services such as policing, K-12 education, emergency services, etc., are provided universally. And again, it all started in California. And due to the loose eligibility criteria, many illegal aliens receive benefits from federal, state, and local jurisdictions, despite the fact that they have no legal status. And again, I feel like this really started in California because this was going on 20 years ago.
Yeah. California always leads the nation in stupid ideas. Right?
All right. Give us the next one and you take
it. Well, the majority of costs are incurred at the state and local level.
Right.
And the predominant cost at the state and local level is K-12 education of the children of the illegals, which cost taxpayers roughly $70 billion a year and climbing. No question about that. This estimate, it covers the education of children with no legal status and U.S. born children of illegal aliens that are here, because people have children here, which are the anchor babies. Those kids have to go to school, so that's counted in here also, because that is a product of the illegal immigration.
I'm going to jump in here real quick as a former teacher who worked in a couple of different school districts in Southern California. I saw this firsthand in the 90s when bilingual education was in place, and the incredible cost, it was unbelievable. I mean, there was a whole nother part of the school dedicated to bilingual education, but it really wasn't bilingual because the kids who couldn't speak English were never put into English speaking classes. They were put into Spanish speaking classes. And I worked with these kids in a separate program that was tied to the school, but not part of the district per se. And it was incredible how many of these kids were desperate to learn English and were not allowed to speak English in these bilingual education classes, which California did away with eventually. And then I've heard they have now reinstated. So again, that it costs so much money.
Well, and think about it, you know, and we're going to talk about like Ohio and stuff later on, but especially when you're bringing in people from Haiti and whatnot that speak, you know, Creole and these languages, not dialects, just English and Spanish.
Right.
And you have to bring in interpreters for these kids, all the kids, in every class. And it's the cost is overwhelming. But the second highest expenditure for illegal aliens at the state level is medical expenditures, which are estimated to cost approximately $22 billion per year.
Not a surprise, the medical.
And they're going up and up and up. This figure includes cost attributable to uncompensated medical care, improper Medicaid payouts, Medicaid for citizen children of illegal aliens, and certain state laws that provide Medicaid coverage for illegal aliens. So they are being covered, you know, it's not just an emergency room visit. They are being covered with all of our Medicare and Medicaid.
Yeah, I agree. All right, the impact of the border crisis is nationwide. So it is now being felt not just in border states, but in destination states. And New York City is a very good example. You don't think of New York City as a border state by any means, but over 180,000 migrants have settled and 30,000 migrant children have enrolled in New York City public schools. Mayor Eric Adams now anticipates the border crisis will cost the city $10.6 billion, with a B, through the summer of 2025. So that's for 1 year, just one school year, if you will. Take away the rest of the books.
Well, this situation, it's being replicated across the country.
Yeah, right? It is.
These local costs for food and shelter, as well as other undocumented costs, they're not incorporated into this report.
Right.
So this number, this $150 billion that we're showing you, that we're telling you about, is going to be way higher when you include all the ancillary things.
And there's also something in the news right now about the Haitians being paroled into the country, specifically Ohio. So would you tell the audience what that is? Because when I hear the word paroled, I think of someone getting out of jail.
Right,
So tell us what this means.
No.
What is this program?
Yeah, the administration's parole program is for, wait for it, Cubans, Haitians, Nicaraguans, and Venezuelans.
Okay.
Many people don't realize this program has an immediate and significant cost to the taxpayers. So upon being paroled into the U.S., these aliens who have no legal status. This parole is not a legal status.
Well, let me just back up. When you say upon being paroled, you mean allowed to enter?
Allowed to enter, yes.
Yeah, we need to clarify just what that means. Okay,
so
continue.
It's like, basically, I think they get paroled from, they take them into, air quotes, custody as they're processing them, and then they're sending them out saying, you're paroled. You're out now here out in the general public here.
So, as you were saying, they have no legal status.
They have no legal status. That is very important because Kamala Harris right now is trying to say these are legal citizens or they have legal status. They do not.
They do not. I'm shaking my head now.
She and Joe Biden decided they're going to use two different programs, this parole and another one, and confer legal status upon them. That's not the way it works. It's illegal. And as soon as Trump's in office, that's going to be reversed. But
let's talk about the people who have no legal status. What do they immediately become eligible for under this program?
Yeah, under this program, you come in, you get work permits, so you can start working right away. You get a Social Security number.
Well, that makes things a lot easier.
Yes. They get Obamacare, so they get health care, and they can obtain tax credits like the EITC, the Earned Income Tax Credit. And not to be also adding to children some more additional child tax credit, the ACTC.
Okay, I didn't even know about this, by the way. So what is the ACTC?
It's an additional child tax credit. That's what it stands for.
Okay.
It's the acronym. Just means the more kids you have, the more tax credit you get.
Oh boy.
Right.
Okay.
And of course, Kamala wants to keep increasing it even more. So
okay.
But on top of that, their parolees are eligible for federal benefit programs on the same terms as legal permanent residents. So okay. Like you were talking about, you please do.
Okay, so this is unbelievable. They immediately become qualified aliens, that's a quote from the report, under the law, and after a five-year waiting period, they may receive benefits under Medicaid, Social Security Supplemental, Social Security, Supplemental Security Income, SSI.
SNAP.
I was getting to okay. it. Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, right. SNAP.
Go SNAP.
Temporary Aid Assistance for Needy Families, TANF, as it's known, and Federal Student Aid. Now, what's really interesting about this is there's a little hiccup.
Wait. But they have to wait 5 years to get all these benefits, right?
Not all of them.
Oh, do tell.
Oh, I'm going to tell. Okay. So, why don't we go back and talk about the four buckets of people, the Cubans, Haitians, Venezuelans,
and Nicaraguans.
Okay, right. However, for the Cubans and Haitians, the five-year waiting period does not apply. You guys, that means that Cuban and Haitian nationals brought to the U.S. through the president's parole program, again, weird name for it, are immediately eligible to apply for and receive benefits from all major federal benefits programs. This happens even before they file a tax return, despite the fact that they have no legal status. This is so upsetting to me on so many levels that we don't have time for me to get into. just because personally I've been affected by this stuff and seen how it can be abused. And this is not okay.
Well, and you know, this report doesn't even go into, you know, what the fentanyl crisis is doing.
I mean,
this is just actual costs of these people here, but they're not telling you the mules that are bringing the huge amount of drugs in. And I mean, I know we've got some of the medical stuff on here, but I guarantee you it is way more than that. And it used to be that, you know, you couldn't turn anybody down from from the emergency room,
right, yeah.
Which is fine. But except now it's every doctor everywhere now has to accept these people.
Yeah.
And, you know, this $150 billion, that's probably a drop in the bucket to what the actual costs are going to be.
Well, did you want to talk about looking ahead?
Looking at just three programs, Medicaid, SNAP,
okay,
and the Earned Income Tax Credit, it's estimated that the cost of illegal immigration will increase by another $20 billion.
Okay.
It's soon going to surpass $200 billion a year. And that does not even include a lot of other federal benefits at the state and the local levels. So it's beyond belief. You're costing basically almost a quarter of $1 trillion a year.
You know, and what I find fascinating about this is if you speak out about illegal immigration, people will often accuse you of being cruel and insensitive and mean, or this is America, we welcome everybody.
Racism, forgot that.
Oh, I forgot, yeah. And here's the thing. Yes, at the turn of the 20th century, we let a lot of immigrants in. Then we became a very isolationist. Oh, I should mention I have a headache and can't speak today. Country for many decades. And then we opened the floodgates again.
But wait, why did we become an isolationist country for many decades?
Because we wanted the immigrants to assimilate into our culture.
Oh,
yes.
Right.
Yes.
Instead of just welcoming millions in and saying, here you go.
Well, here's what I just want to put out for all the people that think, you know, we're not racist, but that think that we are just
for
saying this.
Some of my best friends are. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to put this out there. Tell me one other country in the world that would allow this. Now, you could come back with, but America's different. And I'm going to say to you, I have always felt we have to put Americans first. And there's nothing wrong with legal immigration. Not at all. We are a country of immigrants. That's fine. But there is no other country in the world where you could just walk in, one, just walk in, and then two, get all these benefits. It cannot happen. And I'm just going to, you know, throw a little personal thing in here. My dad has looked at living. He's retired. He's looked at living outside the U.S. I don't think he's happy with either party anymore. And he has looked and he is not able to live outside the U.S., especially in Europe, because he doesn't qualify for their healthcare system because he hasn't paid into it. And so unless he's obscenely rich, and he's well off, but not obscenely rich, he can't do it. And I want to put that out there. That's just a good example. Like, my dad has gone into the weeds on this, and what, every other month he comes up with a new country,
yeah.
Right? If you're listening, Dad, it's true. And, but it's not really feasible.
Right.
For
they look at the cost of living and it's like, oh boy, that's a lot lower. And then they say, oh wait, I can't get any medical coverage.
I'm getting older
and have medical issues. So,
exactly.
Yeah. And if I can jump in here, yeah. You know, like you mentioned earlier about in the 20s and 30s, when we let so many people into this country, guess how many benefits they got?
None.
There you go. Yes.
Nothing.
Yeah. I forget what economist said it. Some very famous economist says you can have open borders or you can have a social safety net.
Yeah.
You cannot have both. You cannot give away benefits to an open society, open border society.
Yeah.
It can't.
And guys, this is unbelievable. It has to stop. It is not going to stop under a Harris-Walz administration. It's only going to get worse.
Yeah.
And every state now is a border state. Didn't used to be that way, but it really is. There was a time where California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas were really feeling this more than any other part of the country. That's not true anymore. So please take a look at the candidates. And if this issue is important to you, please choose wisely. And I highly recommend that put aside gender, put aside ethnicity and race, put aside personality, and just look at the policies of these people. I know that's hard to do. I know it's hard to put all that aside, but just look at the policies and vote that way. And I say this as someone who has never voted for Trump, but if I just look at the policies, I have to tell you, I'm leaning in that direction. I'm certainly not going to vote for Harris. I mean, I've said many times on the show that I have sat the last couple of elections out. And this year, it's part of being a co-host of the show, I feel like I have to engage, even though Alabama's already decided. But I have to engage because I just can't believe what is going on.
I think we also need to look for people that are undecided or leaning to the left with these immigration policies. And we talked earlier about border states and destination cities.
Yeah.
Right. Big difference here. Obviously, there's a physical border state and they used to carry the brunt of
right.
all of this. And then guess what? Not only did some of these governors start sending people out, but the federal government, Joe Biden's administration and Kamala Harris's administration, started flying and busing these people.
Yeah.
All around the country, spreading them out everywhere under cover of darkness and everything else.
Although Martha's Vineyard, they sent them back.
Yeah. Oh, they immediately called out the National Guard and they were gone
like,
within
no,
48 hours. Yes.
Such
quite funny. Yes. The hypocrisy is not one of their words. But you have to think, oh, well, they can't come here, right? A lot of these people think
that's not true.
Look at Springfield, Ohio, for crying out loud now. All of a sudden, what do you have, a town of 60,000 people? And then they throw 20,000 Haitians in or whomever. It wouldn't matter what group it is. If all of a sudden you dump, you know, a third of your population pretty much into a town and they don't even speak the same language.
Yes.
I mean, my gosh, come on, people. You have to look now and say, yes, this can happen to my neighborhood for sure.
Absolutely. Let's get on to some happier things, shall we?
We'll let the viewers decide if they're happier.
All right. This week in wins.
Okay. This is a good one.
Yeah. This is a good one. It's from our friends, Sundance at theconservativetreehouse.com. So they'll put that in the show notes. The title of the article is simple, basic. Georgia election ballot rule sends left-wing activist into
apoplexy.
Thank you. This is one of those words I always say wrong, even though I'm a writer. So I love this. And if you remember, in the last presidential election, Georgia went to the Democrats, but there was some hanky-panky going on. So this is what it says. A very simple ballot counting rule was affirmed by the Georgia Election Board on Friday in a 3-2 vote. The hand count ballot rule is very basic and simple. Essentially, It says that all paper ballots must be hand counted and matched to the number of people recorded electronically to vote. So for example, if 1,000 votes are electronically counted, there should be 1,000 physical ballots to match.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my
And this
gosh.
Is not complicated and it will not take much time. So the ballots are not being checked for voting accuracy or vote recording or candidate specifics. Only the number of ballots, the number of physical ballots have to match the number of recorded voters. Easy peasy, very simple, not complex.
It isn't? Okay. No. Well, what could be the objections?
Well, despite the simplicity of this rule, the DNC and left-wing activists
Who was that?
The DNC.
Okay. Democratic National Committee. Okay.
Are furious about this simple process and quote, this is nothing more than an 11th hour effort by Donald Trump and his pit bulls to slow down the counting of ballots so they can attack and undermine any result they don't like. According to that's Jamie Harrison, chairman of the Democratic National Committee, he said on Friday afternoon. Now, let's put Jamie aside. The Georgia election rule, though, through the hand count, stops the issue of scanning a ballot more than once to count a single ballot or bunch of ballots as multiple votes of the batch. So one ballot, one vote, one voter, match the counts. Again, easy peasy. So think of this like in terms of money. If you count 100 $1 bills, you should have $100,
mm-hmm.
right? However, if you count 100 $1 bills and your sales report shows $500, there's a problem and probably some embezzling and things going on.
Yeah.
And so ballots work the same way. So this is a very simple rule. I love it.
It's insane how the left is just fervently objecting to this.
Well, and I mean, Trump has a lot of influence, but do you really think that he was somehow involved in this Georgia election? I don't know.
Well, we all saw the video of poll workers feeding things,
yes.
feeding ballots through the machines, going to the other side, getting them.
In Georgia.
Yes, in Georgia, yeah. getting them, taking back around, feeding them in again, and they would do that over and over and over. So if you have 100 ballots and you come out with 500 votes, there is a problem. You people on the left, please explain to me how this is racist or anything like that. You have to have the number of ballots and the number of votes have to match up. It's not difficult. It is one of the basic tenets of our voting. One person, one vote.
Yeah.
That's it.
All right. So that was our weekend wins. Edward, you want to take away the weekend what the fuck?
WTF, as I like to say. Let's do it from our good friend Bonchi at redstate.com.
I like Bonchi.
Bonchi going with one name. I love it.
Okay. This is a good one.
Headline. This is, again, just this past week. Joe yep. Biden's cosplaying as president just got much weirder.
It's a great headline. I got to give it to him.
On Friday, questions arose after Joe Biden was spotted sitting at the head of the table and leading a cabinet meeting at the White House.
Interesting.
The fact that it was the first in over a year only made the situation more perplexing.
What was the first in over a year?
The cabinet meeting.
Okay,
so
just want to make sure people understood that.
First cabinet meeting in over a year. Let that sink in,
yes,
first off.
Exactly.
You should meet at least monthly with every cabinet member. You should have a full meeting every, if not weekly.
Yeah.
Anyway, Joe Biden, he hasn't met with that for that long. And when he finally does, his unelected wife takes the lead. Is this one of these bring your wife to work days?
Yeah.
Was that on the calendar? I didn't see it.
Yes. It gets better, people.
Later that day, it was revealed that her name was being embossed on honorary legislation folders as if she were equal to the president.
She was not elected president.
So these beautiful binders that they give out, and they're like leather and everything else, and it's got Joe Biden's signature embossed on there and Joe Biden right underneath. And it's like, but so basically from the article, the ride is almost over for Jill. Those Air Force One rides and taxpayer-funded vacations end in January.
Yeah.
Perhaps she just wants to make a few more moments, inappropriate and head-scratching as they may be. Now, of course, the other possibility is far worse.
And I think more likely.
Namely,
that's my opinion.
Joe Biden is so completely unable to fulfill the duties of that office that Jill Biden is having to step in, air quotes, unofficially and in a more public fashion.
I think that's far more likely. I really do.
It's bizarre. I watched the video of it, and he introduces her, and then he sits to the side of the table and lets her sit at the head of the table. Wow.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking. We really don't know who's running the country, people. We really don't.
And again, the huge part for me on this is they haven't had a cabinet meeting in over a year.
Yeah.
I mean, again, who's running the country?
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And we didn't get into it in this particular episode because we're focused on illegal immigration. But one of the questions that should have been asked of Kamala in that debate, which we both said we felt like she won, but one question that was not asked, and there are rumors that there was a deal with ABC that she would not be asked about Joe Biden's health, when she knew how bad it was and how much she was covering it up. And that question was never asked of her. In fact, nobody's asking her that question.
No. I also want to know, total sidebar.
Yeah.
She said she's owns a gun.
Yeah, I know.
I would like to know what kind of gun.
Yeah.
Please tell us. How often do you go to the range?
Yeah.
Please tell us. Anyway.
All right.
Let's move along, shall we?
All right. To my favorite segment.
Ah, yes.
This Week in Woke. This is from our friend Bethan Sexton at the Daily Mail. So the title is, Pampered New York Times tech workers threaten to strike on election day unless bosses agree to their extreme demands. So furious tech workers at the New York Times are threatening to strike on election day unless bosses meet their lengthy list of outlandish demands. Let's go into them, shall we? So the request from these union members include a 4-day work week for increased pay.
Okay, so wait, they want to work
less
and make time more. And make more money.
Yep.
That's what a great idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry,
move along.
We'd all love that. unlimited sick leave.
Unlimited.
Unlimited. Yes. And I kind of love this one just because we love our pets, but it's pretty funny. Paid time off for pet bereavements. Yes.
I love our cat and dog. However, when they do go, I will be incredibly sad, but I'm not going to tell my employer I cannot come into work.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, maybe you can take unlimited sick leave.
Well, that's true. Yeah. going back to that one.
Yeah.
It says unlimited sick leave. Can you imagine if that's for mental illness also?
Oh, yeah.
Nobody will go to work.
Yeah.
Right?
That's
I mean,
true.
They're all mentally ill.
Well, I'm just going to throw in here the whole idea of unlimited sick leave or unlimited PTO of any kind can be traced back to, at least a lot of people say, to Richard Branson. So we blame you.
At
Virgin.
Virgin
he
Airline.
He was one of the first to implement unlimited PTO of any kind. And the results were, after this was analyzed, is it turned out that people were actually taking less vacation days than they would have because they were scared of losing their jobs. They were scared of the unlimited PTO. So that's what's really fascinating about it, is that it can actually have the reverse effect. But
wow. Are there any more demands that these people want?
Oh, yes. Oh, it gets so good. All right. So they are demanding, these union tech workers, trigger warnings around discussion of the news.
Okay. And what company are we talking about?
New York Times.
New York Times. What does the New York Times do?
News.
Yes. Right. So
okay.
Let's break this down real quick.
Okay.
We've got time.
Do we have to break it down because it's so simple?
So if you're a journalist and I'm a producer and a tech worker is walking by, we have to announce to that person that we're going to be discussing news, and he could be triggered by that. Or I'm sorry, they could be triggered.
I don't believe in trigger warnings, people.
Wow.
When I grew up, those things didn't exist.
You work
get over it.
At a news company.
Yes.
Okay. Keep
all
going.
All right. Banning scented products in break rooms.
I'm sorry, what?
Banning scented products in break rooms.
Such as, what are we?
Well, okay. So I feel about this on both sides, actually. So.
Okay.
I love perfume, and when I'm out and about, usually wear perfume. But I also know, on the flip side of this, when I was teaching, do you remember like the, I don't know if your boys were into this or they were too young, but that Axe spray.
Oh God. Yeah.
Oh God. Oh, the Axe spray.
Yeah.
So the Axe spray became very popular with my seventh graders, the boys. And I was allergic to it. I would start sneezing, you know, I would get runny nose. And I did ban that for my classroom. And so I kind of understand that, but I think that's more of an please, if you could not do it, not a demand. I mean, yeah. So I kind of get it on both sides. Right. As someone who loves scents and things like that, but also having an allergy to certain scents, I kind of get that one. Let's put it this way. Of all their demands, that one's the, you know,
the least craziest.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And then this one's the crazy. Job security for foreign employees on visas in the event of layoffs, which ties so perfectly into this whole episode. So job security for foreign employees on visas in event of layoffs.
So if the New York Times is going to lay off some people and they want to like cut their foreign desk more or something like that, that they can't. So there has to be job security for foreign employees.
But if you're an American, you're out.
Wow.
That makes no sense, by the way. Wow. So the union, which represents about 600 tech staff at the Times, and again, this is the tech staff, said the timing of the strike is no accident, and it's designed to inflict maximum disruption.
And again, what is the, when is it?
Election Day.
Election Day.
Election Day.
Okay.
So, and put this in perspective, guys, the average salary of a New York Times tech worker is around $40,000. No. That's not a lot of money in New York. The average salary of a New York Times tech worker is around $40,000 more than their editorial colleagues.
So the people actually that are doing the tech make 40 grand more than the people everybody else.
Yeah, the writers, the journalists. I mean, we all know that profession doesn't pay incredibly well. So, that's a good This Week in Woke.
You know, I find it kind of interesting that they're going to strike on Election Day. Okay, if it's a one-day strike, I say New York Times, tell them to go screw themselves. Because we don't have any results.
We might
anymore.
Not have any results. Yeah.
I mean, if it's for like the next month when we're still counting ballots in December, then you might have a problem. So, right? There's no more Election Day. Right?
There should be.
And I mean, the very few states are like Florida that actually counts and gets all their ballots in on that night.
By the way, all the states could do that. It is feasible. I'm just saying.
Yes. Indeed, okay. Indeed. Well, that was fun.
Oh, yes. That was a delight. We see many of you watching live. So thank you so much for joining us today. Please follow us on all social media channels and platforms. And you can join us live on most Sundays, including next Sunday, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 1 p.m. Eastern. And we stream live on YouTube, Rumble, LinkedIn, X, and Facebook. If you're listening to the podcast, which always drops the next day, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast. We're available wherever you're listening right now. And you can support our show by joining our locals community. All the details for that are on the podcast episodes at myfavoriteconservative.show. That's myfavoriteconservative.show. And that's also where you can reach out to us, even anonymously, you can.
Oh, indeed.
Yes, because yeah. We know a lot of people are kind of afraid. So,
a final word, if
final
I may.
Word,
Let's have this goal for this week. No presidential assassination attempts, just for the week. You know, see if we can hold ourselves to not trying to kill a presidential candidate this week.
Well, I'm going to throw this out there, since you brought that up. Why are they trying to kill Trump and not Harris?
Because right-wingers, that doesn't make any sense, does it? Oh, wait, it's because of Trump's rhetoric. He's making people shoot at him.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, so he has to tone down his rhetoric. You know, that should be a show. I think we're itching towards something.
Who do people fear more becoming president? Do they fear Harris? No, because it will be status quo and worse. Do they fear Trump? Yes, because he's going to make significant changes that will actually help our country. And he has a track record of doing so.
Godspeed to President Trump on not getting another attempt this week.
Yes, maybe stay off the golf course. Yes. Thanks so much for joining us today. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye. Bye.